Man, it's what we're coming. You're staying. Of course. I'm just overwhelmed. No, you're welcome. This is not, we have to give a nicer welcome than these people are going to come back. It is rich. It's true. It's the Dafyomi hazing. We're actually taking it easy on you. It's true. All right, people, say good morning. Let's begin. So, first of all, a very special welcome to Seth Rosenberg. Great to have you here. So today that is on tape. Yes, it's on the World Wide Web as well. So let's take a look. Well, today's daf is daf Yutes. We're actually starting from the bottom of Yutches on with base. So both of them again, the Gemara is talking about over here. The Gemara actually quotes the pasuk three lines up from the bottom. So if you remember yesterday, we ended off with the fact that there are 13. That there are 13 different shofos, 13 different collection, we'll call it the collection receptacles within the Beis HaMikdash, 7 of them marked for particular purposes, 6 of them marked just general nidava. So we ended up yesterday, the Gemara trying to discuss what's the symbolism of 6, and the last opinion quoting the Gemara said there's no symbolism. 6 is what they need in order to accommodate the additional surplus funds. So now with that, we start talking about different collection boxes. The Gemara takes this topic a little bit further. The Gemara says, "Ksiv ukechalo sam heviu lifnei hamelech v'yehoyada." So we'll see over here now. The Gemara quoting the pasuk from Divrei HaYamim, and the pasuk speaks about the idea that they would bring before the king. The king that they're referring to over here is King Yehoash. And remember, we already mentioned Yehoyada the Kohen Gadol before. So when they would finish collecting everything, ukechalo sam, when they would finish the collection, heviu lifnei hamelech v'yehoyada. They would go ahead and bring before the king and Yehoyada the Kohen Gadol all that was collected. So Rav Shimon bar Nachman, b'shem Rabbi Yonas and Amar, shtei nedavos asam. So Rabbi Shimon says that the king actually made two different collection boxes. Top of Yutas Amud Aleph, Tanit debei Rabbi Shmuel, nedava achos. The other opinion says, name of Rabbi Shmuel, that no, in fact, there was only one collection box. Dichsiv vayomer hamelech, vayasu aron echod, Vayitnehu beheichal Hashem, vaykov chor b'dalto, because the pasuk explicitly says that what again also in Divrei HaYamim that the king went ahead and made Aron Echod one receptacle. He put it in the heichal in the Beis Hamikdash in the house of Hakadosh Baruch Hu, and he literally made a hole in the top of it in order to be able to receive the money. So therefore, you have a mefurash pasuk, an explicit pasuk that says that there was only one collection box. Let's see. There was only one collection box. So Gemara says, once I give a hodik siv ay, but it says, Vayomra hamelech, Vayasu aron echod, Vayitnehu bishar beis Hashem chutzo. Ah, but there's another pasuk that says that the king said, and they made another receptacle, another aron. You can also say aron over here, of course, just means a receptacle, collection box. They made another aron, and they put it on the gateway of the Beis HaMikdash chutzah outside. So we'll say this indicates that what? That there was another receptacle that ultimately was on the outside of the Beis HaMikdash. So this seemed to indicate that, in fact, there was more than one receptacle, to which the Gemara says, no. Amar Rav Huna mitnei hatneim. That one was placed outside because of the people who were ritually impure. And I will say, what does that mean? So if you take a look at the Karban Ha'ida on the top of the page, so the first line of the Karban Ha'ida, he writes, mitnei hatneim, li'olam nedava achas haisa. In reality, there was only one collection box. Ella she Yehoyada nasno bifnin, but rather the Kohen Gadol had put it inside the Beis Hamikdash. Aval Hamelech achar she yitnehu b'soch, achar she yitnehu b'chutz. Excuse me. Aval Hamelech Amar she yitnehu b'chutz, kedei she yuchlu gamat tmeim, dahainu tmeim meis v'sheretz litein l'socho. So we'll say, interestingly enough, the way the Karban HaEidah understands this was, there was only one receptacle. The Kohen Gadol originally put it inside the Beis HaMikdash. Yehoash commanded that it be put outside of the Beis HaMikdash in order that those who were Tumei, we'll say again, depending on the level of Tumah, depending on your ability to access Harabayis. So certain types of Tumah, as the Karban HaEidah points out, could access Harabayis. So the king ordered that the collection box be put outside of the Beis HaMikdash in order that what? In order that those who are Tumeim could ultimately access it. But Lemaisis, even though the pasuk seems to be describing a second collection box, in fact, it's the same exact one. It was just placed in a different, it was just The king just wanted to place it differently. Now others, the Tikkun Charetin and others understand that in fact what the Gemara is answering over here is that there were two different collection boxes, but two different collection boxes just for utilitarian purpose, because you needed to access two different populations, not because in fact that Lechatchila you wanted two different collection boxes. Okay, so the Gemara goes weiter. The Gemara says, So bichanina b'shem Rabbi Yosef, ach lo ya'asa beis Hashem sifos kesef mizamros. So we'll say, now the Gemara does something very interesting. The Gemara here quotes the Pasuk from Melachim. So the Pasuk in Melachim says, I'll quote to you the Pasuk in its entirety, ach lo ya'asa beis Hashem sifos kesef mizamros mizrikos chatzotros kol klei zav o klei kesef mina kesef hamovi beis Hashem. So the Pasuk in Melachim is quite explicit in saying that the money that was collected in the collection box was not used for the fabrication or creation of instruments. It was made used for many different things, but not for the golden or for the silver instruments. Now, what's interesting about this is the following. If you take a look again at the Karban Ha'eda, so the Karban Ha'eda says, Al Shein, Kolomar, Al Kain, Lomar, or Al Karchach, excuse me, Lomar, the Shtein Nadavos Hayu. The Bimelachim Ksiv, Ach Lo Ye Asa Beis Hashem Sfos Zimuros, Mizamros, Mina kesef hamuva beis Hashem, ubedivrei hayomim k'siv, ukechalosam es sha'ara kesef, vayasuhu klei shoreis. So most like what the Gemara now is pointing out, and this of course is part of the difficulty of Yerushalmi, because the Gemara just assumes you're going to figure out what the question is on your own. But again, in divrei hayomim, in Melachim, the Torah is telling us that monies were not used for instruments. In divrei hayomim, the pasuk is actually quite explicit in saying that the leftover monies were used for instruments. So the Gemara says there's only one way to reconcile this, which is to say what? That in fact there were two different collection boxes. And from one of the collection boxes, the items that were collected were, let's say, either karbanos, but not for instruments. And a second collection box that was there was in fact for the collect, it was the surplus monies was able to be used for the collection of instruments. So the Gemara ends off with a kasha indicating that Lamaisa, it's possible from the Pesukim themselves that there were, in fact, two different collection boxes. So both sides, we're left with psukim that point in different directions as to what exactly was the setup during the times of King Yehoash and the Kohen Gadol Yehoyada. Hajar Alach Per Yud Gil Shofros. Says the Mishnah. Ma'os, bless you. Ma'os Shenimtsu, both sides, very interesting sugya. Ma'os Shenimtsu Bein Ashkalam Le'Nedavah. So we'll say, again, if you remember, we spoke about yesterday the different collection shofros, the different collection receptacles. So now, you can imagine, it's going to end up happening, inevitably, that somebody's going to make a deposit, and what happens? They think the money goes in, but it doesn't go in. So what happens? They're coming to empty out the shofros, and what do they find? They find money in between the shofros. So the obvious shaila is what? Is how do you designate that money? So the Gemara says, for example, Ma'os Shenimtsu Bein Shkalim L'Nedava. Let's say you find money in between the receptacle marked Shkalim. Shkalim means, remember, Tiklin Charetin. Shkalim is for the new Shkalim, new half shekel. L'Nedava versus the Nedava. Versus ultimately, again, that receptacle that was used for money for Karbanos Nedava, for Olos. So I'll say, understand also, just these shofros were ordered in a particular way. So just to understand, shkalim is receptacle number one, and olos is receptacle, or nadava is receptacle number 13. So the Gemara is going to discuss how it is exactly that you are finding money in between receptacle one and receptacle 13. So the Gemara says, so what's that? So what do you do with the money? Karov lishkalim yiplu lishkalim. If lemaisa the money is closer to the shkalim receptacle, then it's a shekel. If it's closer to Nadava, Yiplu Nadava. Okay, so we'll say, so the first thing we do is we establish it via proximity. So proximity, and I will say, here's what's fascinating. Where do we get this idea? Where do we get this idea that proximity establishes a halachic reality? This is fascinating. Because we'll say, how do you know? Where do you know that from? Oh, so look at the Karban Ha'eda, excellent Baruch Shekivanta. Seth, you have earned your place in the Daf Yomi. You can come back tomorrow. So now look at the Karban Ha'eda, left hand side, where it says Halacha Aleph Yiplu L'Shkalim De Baser Karo Vazlinon Kidichsev Because we also remember in the Egla Rufa is the case of where you find the corpse in between two cities. And remember, how do you establish which city is obligated to go through the process of Egla Rufa? You measure the city that's closest to the corpse. So the point Rabbah says, fast, I never thought about this before. But what the Gemara is saying is, this is the source for the fact that proximity establishes halachic reality. So therefore, if the coins are in between two collection boxes, you establish the fact that the proximity says that it's most probably, it's closer to Shkalim, it's called Shkalim. Closer to Nedavos, it's Nedavos. So the Gemara goes right there. Mechzel, mechzel, aye. What about if it's equidistant? What about if it's equidistant? In that case, yiplu l'nedava. In that case, we give them to nedava. So we'll say what we will see is that l'maisa, when in doubt, which is what happens in a case of mechza mechza, we go l'chumra. We go l'chumra. So in this case, for example, of half shekel versus nedava, nedava is going to be the more chumra designation. So if you look at Shavosai, if you look at the Rivavan, you see the Rivavan on the right-hand side today. We're going on a journey through Yerushalmi today. So Rivavan is on the right-hand side. So you see where he says, Mechza, Mechza, Yiflu, Nedava. The Nedava Chamura. Because Nedava is stricter. Why? Dikula Ola. Because remember, we'll say everything in the Nedava pot has to be used for Olos, for sacrificial purposes. You can't be used for anything else. Aval Shkalim, Shirehen, Kili, Kiddusha Sayu. The nitnin lechoma sa'ir migdol osep. Rabbi, remember we've learned this before. What do you do with the leftover shekels? Leftover half shekels. Pretty much, you can use it for anything. I mean, when I say anything, anything within moderation, meaning you use it ultimately again for bet kabayis, for repairs. You use it not even outside of the Mishnah itself. You could use it ultimately to repair the walls of Yerushalayim. So, meaning obviously those monies are much more calm. So the Gemara therefore says if it's mechza al mechza, we give it to nedavos because they're more chamer. Fine. Vector. Bain Eitzim Lilavona. Let's say you find it between the collection receptacle for Eitzim, right? For wood for the Mizbeach, or Lavona, the frankincense. So what happens? Le Eitzim, Karov Le Eitzim, Yiplu Le Eitzim. If the money is closer to the Eitzim pot, then it goes to Eitzim. Lilavona, Yiplu Lavona. If it's closer to Lavona, it goes to Lavona. Mechza a Mechza I. What if it's half and half? Yiplu Lilavona. Then it goes to the Lavona pot. Why, Rabosai? Because again, Lavona is more chamer. Why? Again, look at the Rivavan. Lavona, chamira, de Lavona hi atzma kriva. Aval eitzim hi machshire karma. Because we'll say, what's the distinction? Lavona itself is a karban. Lavona itself is karbanic in nature versus the eitzim, which are what? The eitzim, he calls it machshire, right? They're fuel. They're fuel. Obviously, you can't have the carbon without the fuel, but they're not carbonic in nature. But they're again they're carbonic facilitators. So therefore, you go ahead and you give it to the Lavona. Bain Kinin legoz leola. I. What about remember Rabbi Osai the Kinin? The Kinin we saw yesterday already on with Aleph. So the Kinin are the turtle doves, and the goz leola are the pigeons. So what happens if you find money in between those two? Mechza lemechza yiplu. Excuse me, I skipped. Karov l'kinin, yiplu l'kinin. If it's closer to the kinin, then you give it to the kinin. Karov l'goz le'ola. If it's closer to the goz le'ola, then yiplu l'goz le'ola. Mechza al mechza. I. What if it's half and half? Yiplu l'goz le'ola. Then ultimately, I will say it goes into the ola pot. Now I will say, interestingly enough, remember that the idea of kinin could be offered up as nedava versus the goz le'ola, which lemaisa again. Are chatas offerings, right? Are ultimately brought only in obligatory fashion. So if you take a look, by the way, the Rivavan again, the Rivavan says, Ben kine legoz le'ola, yiplu goes le'ola, staman kirabanan de kine chovahin. The echel le'ola, the echel le'chatas. The chatas ha'basar ne'echel le'kohanim umiyad, shiyesh lo shaset le'kohanim ein bo me'ila, va'ola kolil v'chamira tfeis. So I will say again, I said it wrong actually. So the kinin ultimately are brought for a chatos. Chatos, remember any kind of chatos, is partially consumed on the mizbeach, partially given to the kohanim, as opposed to ola, which is totally consumed on the mizbeach. And therefore, again, ola is considered to be more chamer than chatos. Therefore, if it's mechza al mechza, between the kinim and between the gozlos, it goes to the gozlos, it goes to the olos. Fine. Bein chul ma'isashen. I will say now the Gemara takes this out of the realm of karbanos and brings this down actually to a little bit more lemaisa. And this case could actually be halacha lemaisa. Let's say you have two piles of money. A chulin pile of money and a ma'isashini pile of money. Remember, ma'isashini is the tithe that you have to take in a number of years throughout the Shemitah cycle. But the difference with this tithe is it's yours.
it's yours to eat with one condition. You have to go ahead and eat it in Yerushalayim. So let's say again, you have a Ma'aser Sheni pile, you have a Chulin pile, and you find money in between the piles. So where does the money belong? So the Gemara says, Karav l'chulin, yiplu l'chulin. If the money is closer to Chulin, then it's Chulin money. L'Ma'aser Sheni, yiplu l'Ma'aser Sheni. And if it's closer to Ma'aser Sheni, then we assume it's Ma'aser Sheni. Mechza l'mechza. What about if it's half and half? Yiplu l'Ma'aser Sheni. Then I both say, what? Then it becomes a Ma'aser Sheni. Fine. So the Gemara says, Zehaklal. Zehaklal. So I'll say, this is actually interesting because remember, one might have thought that for whatever the reason, the principles being espoused in the first part of the Mishnah were only in effect in the Beis HaMikdash. So the Mishnah purposely brings another case of non-Beis HaMikdash situation to show you, no, the concepts that we are espousing here are general halachic concepts that can be applied anywhere. And now the Gemara ends off finally with the principle. Zehaklal. So the Mishnah says, here's the principle. We always go after proximity, even if what? Even if going after proximity will yield a lenient result. So meaning, when it comes to proximity, we're not concerned with leniency or stringency. We always go after proximity. However, again, mechza lemechza, if lemaisa, again, something is in the middle, then lahachmir. So also again, when we can't use proximity, which makes sense, if you can't use proximity, because let's say it's equidistant from the two objects, then lemaisa, you're dealing with then really with a suffix da'oraisa. All these cases are da'oraisas, because again, these designations, well, we'll call it a suffix. I guess we'll have to see if we call it a suffix da'oraisa or da'rabanan. But in this case, the way Chazal said to resolve the suffix is l'chumra. Fine. Says the Gemara, lo hutzricha, the low bain shkalim lekinim. So we'll say the Gemara raises a very interesting gasha. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. You started out the Mishnah's case by teaching me about a situation of where a shekel was found between the shkalim receptacle and the nedav receptacle. Now we'll say, as we pointed out, shkalim was receptacle number 1 and the nedav was receptacle number 13. So the Gemara says, why don't you make an easier case of where the shkalim, or when the coin was found between shkalim and kinin. So apparently, again, the receptacle for shkalim and the receptacle for kinin were right next to each other. So why do you have to go between 1 and 13? Why don't you just choose two receptacles that are next to each other? Oh, to which the Gemara says, I'll tell you, because Mishnah is going to teach us another idea. Rabbi Abun Bishim Rabbi Pinchas Kamin Buchliar Hayu Osin. Oh, because you know why? You know how the receptacles were made? The receptacles were made in a circle. And therefore, in reality, receptacle of shkalim and receptacle of kinin were in fact what, Rabosai? Right next to each other. Just to show you, in case you can't visualize a circle. This is what it looked like. These are the shofros, right? They're mamish. Okay. They're mamish shaped like the shovel, and they're arranged in a circle. Therefore, again, what the Mishnah is teaching us kind of derech agav, and often we know this, that the Gemara often teaches us kind of lessons just in passing. So here, my marker. So here, the Gemara is teaching us that lemaisa, everything was arranged in a circle. Okay, so the Gemara goes right there. Mechza lemechza. I will say again, in the case of where you find, it's still going on the first case in the Mishnah, where you ultimately find the shekel in between the shkalim and the nedava, mechza amechza, literally in the middle, yiplu l'nedava. So what did the Gemara say? The Gemara said that lamaisa, we go ahead and we give that money in the nedava pot. So the Gemara says, lo tzurcha, de lo mechza lemechza yiplu l'shkalim. So the Gemara says, I don't understand, why is it exact, why? The Gemara is asking why. Why does it go to Nadava? Why can't it fall to the Shkalim pot? Is the boy Meimar Shema Yiplu the Shiyari Halishka? So we'll say one possibility is because, as we said before, we don't want to fall into the Shkalim pot when it's Mechza Mechza because Shkalim is more Kal. Why is Shkalim more Kal? Because at the end of the day, leftover Shkalim are used for what? Shiyari Halishka. I'm saying the leftovers are used for general repairs. That's one possibility. And therefore, again, we put in the Nadava pot because the Nadava pot is. The nedava pot is only used for karbanos. Istibay, others say, istibay meimar, mechza lemechza kimi shemes. We'll say it's actually very interesting. Others say that when you find a half shekel in between two pots, so lemeis, again, that's no different than someone who went ahead and contributed his half shekel and died. Now, what does that mean? We'll say, so what do you do with this ownerless half shekel? Amar Rav Yasa, so we'll say, first of all, take a look. Take a look. Yeah. Take a look in the Tikkun Charetin on the bottom of the page. It's the third, it's the second word line of Tikkun Charetin, last word on the line. Kimisha Mace. Kimisha Hifish Shiklo Mace. This is like when you find the Mechza Mechza, it's like finding someone, it's like someone who separated out of shekel and died. Va'af agav dizehu v'lo bailim kimo b'meis, u'b'meis dinan de'yiplu l'nedava. So we'll say, the Gemara gives two possibilities. Either A, when it's mechza al mechza between shekel and nedava, we'll give it to nedava either A, because nedava is more chamer. Nedava is more chamer, because ultimately everything that's in the nedava pot is used for kabanos, as opposed to the leftovers in the shekel pot, which can be used for general repairs. Second possibility is, we'll say we already have the idea that shekel, that half shekel is somewhat linked to nedava. How so? If somebody separates a half shekel and then dies before he gets a chance to actually contribute, we actually learned this before. So what happens to it? We actually give it to the Beis Hamikdash for the purchase of olos. So essentially, the Gemara says when you find a half shekel in between the two receptacles of half shekel and olos, and you don't know who it belongs to, you can treat that as a half shekel without an owner, or half shekel whose owner's died, and therefore put it in the nedava pot. Amar Rabbi Yassa, Ad'anan Taman is an interesting phrase as well. If you look at the Karban Aida, he says, Ad'anan Taman, I'm sorry, I'm jumping around a lot today. Karban Aida on the left-hand side, Ad'anan Taman, Kishayisi be'bavel, when I was in Bavel, Shamis called Rav Yehuda Sha'al Shmuel. I heard Rav Yehuda ask the following kasha of Shmuel. Hifrish shiklo umes. If somebody separated the shekel and then died, so what happens? What happens? Well, so what happens to that shekel? Right? I mean, Baruch Dynamics and everything. What happens to the money? Right? You should have simchas. Okay, now what do we do with the money? So the Gemara says, Amalei yiplu l'nedava. So we'll say, and again, and Shmuel answered, it goes to nedava. So the Gemara is just quoting this as a proof to the concept that l'maisa, again, an ownerless shekel is yiplu l'nedava. Therefore, it makes sense that once you already see this concept, that you have circumstances in which a shekel goes into the nedava pot, so mechza al mechza, the easiest resolution is put it in the nedava. Asiris ha'efa shalom. So the Gemara says, listen to this. What do you do in the following case? The Asiris ha'efa. Now, I will say, remember, what is the Asiris ha'efa? So now, again, if you take a look, let's take a look again in the Karban Aida. He says, Mosar Asiris ha'efa shalom. I'm sorry, I left that word. Mosar. So I'll say again, this is a case of where, let's say, you went ahead and you had monies that you were putting aside for Asiris ha'efa. Now, according to the Karban Aida, he says, Shal Kohen Gadol. So we'll say this would be the flower offering of the Kohen Gadol. So let's say the Kohen Gadol was putting aside. There's another. Asiris ha'efa could also be used as a carbon ola viyored as a chatos, but it doesn't really matter for our purposes right now. Let's say you went ahead and you set aside money for asiris ha'efa for this particular carbon, and then what happens? There's leftover monies. So the Gemara says asiris ha'efa shalom. So the asiris ha'efa of the Kohen Gadol, what should you do with the leftover monies? Rabbi Yochanan Amar Yolichim Yam HaMelech. Rabbi Yochanan says literally you have to throw them into the Dead Sea, which means on both sides that those monies cannot be converted to any other use. Rabbi Lazer Amr Yiplu L'Nedava. And Rabbi Lazer said, no, they could, the leftovers can be fall into the Nedava pot. So the Gemara says, 1 second, V'kasha, V'yesh Chatos, Kreva Ola. And Rabbi said, here's the interesting part about that. So according to Rabbi Yochanan says that if you went ahead and you set aside monies that were set aside for a Chatos offering, then L'maisa, even if there are surplus monies, you're stuck. Right, you're stuck. Why? Because a chatos can't be transformed into anything else. Once it's been designated as a particular carbon, you can't transform it into anything else. Mm-hmm. Take a look at the Tikkun Charetin. Three lines in on the Y lines. V'kashi yesh chatos. Now the Tikkun Charetin understands that this is going back on a previous case. Animtsa bein kinin legoz leola. Parak tiktani b'masnisin yiplu legoz leola. The third case in the Mishnah we saw was what? Was where you find money in between the two receptacles for bird offerings. So the first receptacle is what we call kinin. They're both bird pairs. But in the first bird pair, it's a chatos, it's a sin offering. And the second bird pair, right, are the gozlam or the gozlos. Those are an ola. So the Gemara says, if you go ahead and you find the money equidistant between the two receptacles, what do you do with it? You put it in the ola pot. But the Gemara says, how can you do that? Because at the end of the day, then you're taking money that was potentially designated for a chatos and converting it into an ola. How are you permitted to do that? So the Gemara says, Chizkiyah b'shim Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, Tanai beis din hu ala mosaros, Shekirvu olos, sheikrivu olos. So Bosei Rish Lakish says, no, you know what it is? Bosei, it's called the Tanai Beis Din. Tanai Beis Din means that Chazal legislated that when it comes to surplus monies have the ability to be offered as an olah. Now Bosei, normally where the application of that concept is if I'm setting aside money for my chatos. Let's say I'm setting aside money for my chatos, and I set aside, we've had this case a number of different times already. I set aside $100, and it turns out what? I got a chatos for $80. So what happens with what happens with that money? So Chazal legislated that sacrificial surplus funds can be allocated towards olos. Therefore, the Gemara is suggesting that same principle applies over here as well. Therefore, when you find that money in between two receptacles, ultimately you're going to go to chumrah, goes to ola, and even though you may be converting, in fact, chatas money to ola money, Chazal legislated that surplus chatas monies can be allocated towards olos. Ha'isha hazos b'mahim iskaperes. So I was saying, how the Gemara is something very interesting. So what happens now? Let's play this out. So let's say now I find the money in between the kinim and the gozlos. So remember, the kinim are chatas offerings, the gozlos are olos. So let's say now, so if it's mechza goes into the olapot. Let's say now it really was money from the kinim, really was money from the chatas. And a woman brought this because she was a yoledes, she was a zava. So what happens now? So now it turns out that this woman never had her karbanos offered. I will say this because that's what we spoke about yesterday, about the fundamental machlokes with the drive through for obligatory karbanos. So the Gemara says now here, but Aisha hazeh b'mahi miskaperes. What is she going to be atoned for? So I'll say if you take a look, so the Gemara says, let's see back to the Gemara. So I'm going to be Yitzchak. Tanai Beis Dinu. There's another stipulation of the Beis Din. Ha-mesapek esakinin, hu-mesapek esapsula. So Bosai, listen to this. There was a Tanai Beis Din. What was the Tanai Beis Din, Bosai? That if you were the one who landed the contract with the Beis Hamikdash, remember, we already see that the Beis Hamikdash contracted out. Obviously, the Beis Hamikdash did not, They didn't grow their own birds. They didn't farm their own birds. That's right. They obviously outsourced these things. So somebody landed a very lucrative contract with the Beis Hamikdash. So we've already seen, by the way, that there were a number of stipulations in that contract. Remember, we already saw about the price fluctuations. There was another one. What's the other stipulation? Then in these kind of cases, the guy who had the contract for birds would supply another pair of birds to the kinim pot. So both say, see, here's what's amazing over here. See, even though now what we're saying is, I found money, I found shkolin in between the kinim pot, the chatas pot, and the ola pot, and it's equidistant, so which one does it go to? Which one does it go to? The money, that's there. Ola. Money goes to Ola because Ola is more chamer, because Ola is totally consumed on the Mizbeach versus Chatas, which is also consumed by the Kohanim. Iber says, Gemara, but what happened? But again, you don't know in reality what that's for. You're just going to Chumrah. But you don't know, meaning we're both saying, as opposed to proximity, which establishes a halachic reality, telling you that Mechza al Mechza, you go to Chumrah, it does not establish a halachic reality. It's just a way, it just resolves halachic doubt. But you don't know if what you did is correct. It's just the only way to solve the doubtful situation. But what about the fact maybe that money was really chatas money? Maybe a woman stopped by the Beis Hamikdash earlier that day. She had given birth, and this was her chatas. So now what? Samar says, no need to fear. In any of these cases, when that happens, and as soon as we put that money in the olapot, right, they give a call to the guy who supplies the birds and say, listen, we had a doubtful situation. Read the fine print in your contract, because every single time we have one of these doubtful situations, you have already agreed to supply us another pair of birds on the chatas level as well. So at the end of the day, they would essentially the money would be allocated in both directions. The physical money allocated to the olos, but an extra bird pair, meaning the guy's not going to have to supply the money, he has to supply the birds. Another bird pair for the chatas. So really, really amazing.
But if she didn't drop off the money actually for the chatas, are you now offering up the chatas?
So this has to. Oh, so this also is all part of this Tanai Beis Din. All part of this Tanai Beis Din is in these kind of cases, we have no, which by the way, now you understand this adds fuel to the fire of the opinion that we saw yesterday, that there was no collection box for any obligatory carbonos. Because you could see, you really get yourself into incredible messes with this. So let's go back there. So the Gemara says, Lo tzurcha, ella bein kitoris la'itzim. Lo tzurcha, delo bein kitoris la'itzim, the levona l'zahav, the lo tzurcha bein kitores le'itzim, the levona lizav lichach pores. So the Gemara says, but there are so many more cases. So the Gemara is not asking, but Mishnah, there are 13 receptacles. So why don't you just go ahead and list all of the cases? Meaning, this is always also an interesting thing. Either list one case or list all of the cases. But you listed three cases. So why don't you go ahead and list all of them? To which the Gemara says, okay, stylistically, the Gemara says, Vitanisa besofa zeha klal holchin achara karov mechzel mechzel hachim. So the Gemara says, we gave a couple of different cases. You're right, more than one. To illustrate the principle, but obviously we don't have to go through each and every one because the Maisa, that's why we have the principle at the end. And Rabbi said that is the halacha l'maisa, that when you can use proximity to establish halachic reality, that's what we do. But mechza al mechza, we go l'chumra, and the Rambam actually paskins like this idea that l'maisa, the people who signed on to the contracts, would be obligated to go ahead and reimburse the Beis HaMikdash for any type of chata situations like that. I'm sorry?
Why can't you say to know where the things in the circle were? If you take six of them, you can deduce where the rest of the...
Yes, you know, so I guess that's what the Gemara gave that as the first answer. That's the Gemara answered the first time when I asked why you're doing between 1 and 13. I guess here the Gemara doesn't answer it again. I don't know why. You could have just said that. Everything is to teach us the order. I don't know. Says the Mishnah. So we'll say, once we start this now, we extend this conversation a little bit. So now let's say you find money in front of Sochrei Behema. Sochrei Behema are animal dealers. This is in Yerushalayim. So you find money in front of the animal dealers. The olam meiser. The monies are always considered to be meiser shenua. Always meiser shenua. So we'll say, that means you find money on the ground. You find money in the ground in front of Sochrei Behema, in front of the animal merchants, that's always considered to be meiser sheni money. And I will say, here's what's interesting. So take a look at the Karbana Eidah for just a moment. A lot of fascinating information. I'm going to have to finish this down. All right, a lot of fascinating information today. So look what he says. The Karbana Eidah is actually right across on the left-hand side. The Ola Meiser, Afilu Kola Shana Kula. I will say, this is amazing. Now remember, we'll see that when did you have a preponderance of Meiser Sheni money? During the Regalim. Because remember, people, it wasn't so posh, depending on where you live, just to go to Yerushalayim. So people would often save up their Meiser Sheni money. And then when they were going to Yerushalayim anyway, that's when they would spend it. This is Kol HaShana Kula. Why? This is amazing. It just gives you a window into life during times that Beis HaMikdash. Watch this. Karbana Eita. Afilu Kol HaShana Kula. Lefisha Oli Regalim Einon Maspikim Lahotzi Kol Meiser Sheni Shalem Beregalim. So say, what would happen? You'd come to Yerushalayim with your Meiser Sheni money, and generally, people did not get to spend all of their Meiser Sheni money. Just the way that it happened, it could be a significant amount of money. People just didn't get to spend it. So what would you do with your leftover Meiser Sheni money? So most remember, you're not really going to take it home with you. Because the truth is, to take it back and then have to bring it back again is a little bit of a to-do. So what did people do? They gave it to their relatives. They gave their Meiser Sheni money to their relatives or to their good friends. Betovas hana. Now, betovas hana means what? They wouldn't ask them for anything in return for it. Meaning, they wouldn't ask me, do me a favor, you know, buy my Meiser Sheni money. They would do it as a beautiful gesture. And what happens? Vehein ochlin osam bikdushasa. Now, also remember, when they give the Meiser Sheni money to someone else, that money is still Meiser Sheni money. So the people who received it have to treat it with the kdusha Meiser Sheni. Ve'ikrachilas ma'os Meiser Shlamim ha'yumavin mehen. And remember, how do people normally dispose of Meiser Sheni money? Through the purchase of animals for olos, for shlamim. Remember, shlamim on both sides, everybody gets a little piece of the animal. Part of it goes to the mizbeach, part of it goes to the kohan, and part of it goes to the owner. So the most common usage for meiser sheni money was shlamim animals. Therefore, va'af agav delek ikal amemar shema min amochri naflu, v'neschalu kvar, keban delochin habiru. So we'll say, listen to this. So therefore, what does the Mishnah say? If you find money in front of the animal merchants, then what? Then the Maisa, we assume that money is Maisa Sheni. And again, this is even not during the Regalim, because there's such a preponderance of Maisa Sheni money. So, but why don't you say that money belongs to the merchant? You find money in front of his store. Shouldn't you assume that belongs to the merchant? I will say, again, remember, and if it belongs to the merchant, then what kind of money is it? Then it's chulin. It's chulin, because remember, when you use Meiser Sheni money to purchase an animal, what happens? Sanctity is transferred onto the animal, and the money is deconsecrated. So why didn't you say that the money is deconsecrated money that belongs to the merchant? Look at the Karbana Eidah. This is amazing. He says, and even though you might want to say it belongs to the merchants, he says, Kevan delokin havi ruba, shari kama anashim lokin mitagar echad, amri delokuchin heim, velon eschalav hari meiser. Because why are both saying rove? Rove of the people that traverse that area are not the merchant, is not the merchant. And therefore, again, the majority of the people are using Meister Sheni money. Therefore, we assume that the monies that are found there are, in fact, Meister Sheni money. It's really amazing.
It's just a
rabbi, not necessarily.
I mean,
the front of the circle is just a rabbi.
So if you find, so then we get back to all the other Gemaras we learned about finding something.
We didn't learn those Gemaras yet. That's the good news. I have no idea which. Right, correct. Obviously, all these sugyas lead into other sugyas. Correct about how it's right. Generally, money has no identifying marks. Generally, you don't have to announce money unless you find it in some type of specific formation or some type of significant simen on it. But generally, money is assumed to be lost. So the Gemara goes weiter. So the Gemara says, the olam is fine. Uba harabais. And what happens if you find money on harabais? Chulin. We'll say it's quite interesting. But yet, if you find money on harabais, money in harabayis is chulin. Okay, so the Gemara says the following: Ubishas Yerushalayim bishar kolim olas hashana. And I will say in Yerushalayim during the rest of the year, meaning during the non-regalim, chulin money is also considered to be chulin. I will say again: remember that means money just in general throughout the city. Not remember the case of the animal merchant was a specific situation. This is when if you find money in general, it's considered to be chulin. Ubishas haregal, but if you find money during the regalim, hakol meiser. Then Rabbi said, no matter where you find the money, that money is considered to be Meister Sheni. And there was another interesting case. Basar Shinam Tzaba Azara. Let's say you find meat in the Beis HaMikdash. Rabbi said, what does it mean you find meat? So obviously, something was slaughtered. You find meat, you find parts of an animal sitting in the Beis HaMikdash. Rabbi said, let's say just, even though we've seen only the Kohanim are Zrizin, let's say something happened, and that the Kohanim lost sight of what this particular, I don't know, there was a Beis HaMikdash fire drill. You know, whatever it was, and they lost sight for a moment. So they, there's meat here, and we're not sure exactly what this meat is for. So what happens? So Basar Shenimtza Ba'azara, Evarim Olov, if the animal is cut up into limbs, meaning large limbs, then you know that's an Olov. Because also remember, an Olov is totally consumed on the Mizbeach. Chatichos, however, if it's cut up into smaller pieces, then chatos. We'll say why? Because remember, a chatos is consumed by the Kohanim. So when you're burning an animal on the Mizbeach, totally burned, you wouldn't take the time to cut up the meat into smaller pieces. So therefore, the Maisef, with large limbs, we assume that must have been an Ola. Smaller pieces, it must be a chatos. Ubi Yerushalayim, bless you. Ubi Yerushalayim, Zivchei Shlamim. Right, and in Yerushalayim, ultimately, again, if you find, and the Tikkun Chad, excuse me, the Governor Eidah points out that this is Dafka not in the Shuk. If you go ahead and you find what appears to be sacrificial meat in Yerushalayim, so we assume that what? That Zivchei Shlamin, Ze Vize to Ubar Letzuraso, the Yetzi Lebeis Hasreifa. Now, both say again, Klal Godel is, as much as we identify ultimately what these things are, we don't eat it. We don't eat it. Instead, what do? We go ahead and we allow it to sit overnight. Literally, to upper tsurasa means we allow its form to change, and then we go ahead and we burn it in the Beis HaSrifa. Beis HaSrifa, I will say, was an area in the Azara where they used to go ahead and burn leftover karbanos. So I will say, if you take a look over here, if you take a look, Zeba Zeh in the Karban Ha'edah, see, right? Zeba Zeh, Bein Shnimtza Ba'azara, Bein Shnimtza B'Yushayim, to upper tsurasa. So I'll say, amazingly enough, as much as we're saying you could potentially identify what the karban is, at the end of the day, you won't be able to eat it. Why? Because I will say there's a concept that by karbanos, as soon as there is hesach hadas, as soon as there is some type of lapse of awareness or lapse of attention towards the karban becomes pasul. And therefore what? And therefore lemaisa, now you're not going to destroy it immediately because you want to make sure that it's objectively disqualified. Mm-hmm. The way to ensure that it's objectively disqualified is how? Wait another night. Leave it over one more night. Lina makes it too hard to rust, so the appearance changed, and then you could burn it. Ve'in lezalzaba, and so I'm just finishing the Karban Ha'idah, ve'in lezalzaba, and l'sarpan ad sheyifsilu bevadai. But yet, we don't want to burden until we definitely invalidate it. Hilchach te'unen ibor tzura, v'haylu sheyifsilu benosar, v'abur tzura d'sham shabos ha'yen. So essentially what we do is, passively, we allow the carbon to become nosar, to become leftover. And once it becomes nosar, then we have not only the right, but the obligation to go ahead and destroy it. Bigvulin. What happens if you find sacrificial meat outside of Yerushalayim? So what happens? So the Gemara says, so Bigvulin, here, if you take a look, he says, Ba'ari Yisrael, Bigvulin, Eivarim nevelo. So I'm sorry, this is not sacrificial meat. Excuse me. This is no sacrificial meat outside of Yerushalayim. This is regular meat. Right? Let's say you find a piece of meat and you don't know, is it kosher, is it not kosher, what should you do with it? Mm-hmm. So Bigvulin, if you find it in the cities of Israel outside of Yerushalayim, so what happens? Evarim nevelos. Again, if you find it in large limbs, then you assume that what? That it's a nevela. Why Rabbo say? Now, because again, because the idea is not necessarily why not, it could have been properly even slaughtered, but the idea is that you're going to be feeding it to your dogs. If you're feeding it to your dogs, then Lamai said there's no need to go through the tircha of cutting it up into smaller pieces. Say if you just see a large limb, we assume that that's a nevela. However, chatichos, if you see the meat or the animal sliced into smaller pieces, which looks like what Rabbo say, you're readying it for consumption, then mutaros, then ultimately the meat is permitted. The meat is permitted. Again, this obviously, we're going to see the qualification to it, because this is actually quite amazing. What does this mean? I find the piece of meat lying outside, and lemaisa, I see it cut up into steaks. So that's enough of an indication that the animal's kosher. That it's, obviously, we're talking about situations of Jewish cities. These are Ori Yisrael. So the chazukah is that they're Jews, right? Whether it's the overwhelming majority of people are Jews, or that it's only Jews, that's the only case where this works. Obviously, if you're living in a Gentile city, these concepts are not going to apply. Ubishas haregel. And at the time of the regalim, Shabbosar Meruba, where there's plenty of meat, af ivarim mutaros. Even the limbs, even the larger limbs, are considered to be mutar. We'll say, take a look at the Rivavan. As he says, I'm sorry?
You used to grill the whole thing.
You just...
They grill the whole thing,
right? So, because you also remember, since during the regalim you need an incredible amount of meat, so often, correct, they would prepare entire limbs without cutting it up into smaller pieces. Fine. Says the Gemara. Lo tzurcha delo harabayis kodesh. So also the Gemara says the following. Take a look over here at the Tiklin Charetim. Excuse me, the Karban Aida. He's on top. So it says, Uparich delo lo tzurcha. Lo harile letana lamasne ele baharabayis kodesh. Devadei mitshumas halishka nafal. Shari ein adem rasha lichnos lisham b'maos tzurim b'sadina. And I'm also like, here's what's interesting. The Mishnah made the assumption, that any monies found on Harabayis are by definition chulin. So the Gemara says, why? Why? If anything, I would say just the opposite. That in general, when you find money on Harabayis, where should you assume it came from? From the Chumas Alishka. We just got finished saying there are 13 different receptacles, right? The most logical explanation of that would be that Lemaisa, the money is Kodesh. It came out of one of the Kodesh funds. To which the Gemara says, Rabbi Ba, Rabbi Chia, Bishim Rabbi Yochanan, Chazoka she'ein ha'koin motzi min alishka ma'os ad shehu mechalalon ala behima. So I'll say the Gemara gives a very interesting answer. That the chazoka is that a kohen does not remove money from the chamber, from the money chamber, until he first deconsecrates it on an animal. Now I'll say, what does that mean? Take a look at the Karban Ha'idah again. The Karban Ha'idah writes, Chazoka she'ein ha'koin ha'gizbar ein motzi ma'os min alishka ela is quite amazing. So we would assume that it's the kohen first goes ahead and designates the animal, right? Establishes the sanctity of the animal as the carbon, and then by definition takes out the money. When he takes out the money already, what has effect occurred? The money has been deconsecrated because the consecration, right, the sanctification has already been passed on, transferred on to the animal, and therefore the money is deconsecrated. Therefore, again, Rabbo said, by the time money comes out of the lishka, it's already been what? It's already been deconsecrated, which then helps explain the Mishnah that well. That's why when you find money on the harabayis, the automatic default position is that it's chulin. Says the Gemara, Basar Shinimtza. I will say again, this is very interesting. So if you find meat, so what did the Gemara say? Rav Lezer b'shem Rav Oshia, Hisia das, Ta'on Ivor Tzura. We'll say what the Mishnah is clearly espousing is the idea that if you have a lapse in awareness, look at the Karban Ha'eidah again, on top, third wide line down, Hisia das, Hesech Hadas min HaKodshim. They both say if you have a lapse of awareness about sacrificial items, Afa Gav de Psulin, even though Rabbi say again, that lapse of awareness creates a psul, to unin ibor tzura kol nosefas. So also, here's what's interesting. When a kohen has a lapse of awareness about a sacrificial item, that would really be grounds for the destruction of the carbon right then and there. But we don't like to do that. Instead, what we do is we want to go ahead and we want to establish an objective disqualification. Because also, here's what's interesting. Hesech hadas is something in the kohen. So the Kohen had a lapse of awareness that creates a new reality for the Karban. So the Gemara says, before we burn sacrificial items, which is not a Pasha thing, what we like to do is what? We like to make sure that there's an objective disqualification in the entity of the Karban itself. So what do? We let it sit overnight. Because once it sits overnight, what happens? What is it called? It's called Nosar. Once it's called Nosar, that is an objective disqualification in the goof of the Karban. Also, again, it's not a question of, it's just an idea that before we destroy sacrificial items, we want to make sure that there's something objectively disqualifiable within the Karban. Because remember, we'll get into this more later, but Hesech Hadas is a tricky thing. Lapse of awareness can be a very subjective process. So the Gemara goes weiter. So the Gemara says, Amr Boshia, Masnisin Amra came to Abar Tzura. So Vietz the Beis HaSreifa, the Mishnah in fact said this as Abba, said that even though we spend time trying to figure out, is it a Chatas, isn't it Ola, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter all that much, because we're just simply going to let it stay overnight, let its appearance change, which is the way that the Gemara explains this concept, just leaving it alone, let the appearance change, and we'll burn it the next day because it's Nosar. Amr Biosi, the Yeos. And this is correct. Why? Lo ochlo einat hayachol shaminis kalkal tzuraso. I will say, because remember, Rabbi Yossi says, we really have no choice but to essentially let it sit overnight and destroy it. Why? Because you can't eat it. Why can't you eat it, Rabbi Yossi? Because once you've had a lapse of awareness, once you've already lost track of the carbon, you don't know what may have happened to it. You're no longer in control of the process. You don't know what may have happened to it. Literally, it means, who knows, maybe you had a lapse of awareness and maybe, in fact, you even left it overnight last night. So maybe once you've lost track. You can't eat it. However, lefum came tzarech meimar to over tzuraso v'yetz lebeis hasreifa. So essentially, Rabbi Yossi is saying is, once you really can't eat it, and once there's this uncertainty, and the uncertainty makes us uncomfortable about destroying it right now, the only remedy we have is what? Let it sit out overnight, let it become nosar, and we'll burn it in the morning. Nimtza bigvulin. So we'll say again, if you remember, the Mishnah talked about the idea, if you find meat in the cities outside of Yerushalayim, so what did the Mishnah say? If you find it avarim, if you find it in limbs, large limbs, then we assume that those are nevelos, because the person just plans on feeding it to their animals, therefore there's no need to cut that up into smaller pieces. If you find it in smaller pieces, then we assume that it's kosher. And in times the regal, everything is kosher. So Gemara says the following. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Krispa, b'shem Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, evarim nevelos. We assume that large limbs are assumed to be nevelos. Lokin alehen mishum nevela. And I will say what that means is, if you were to eat it, you would mamish get malchus for going ahead and eating nevela. And I will say, again, that's an interesting thing. Why? Because Lemaisa, at the end of the day, we're still not sure. We're making an assumption that because whoever shechted or whoever slaughtered this animal did not take the time to chop it up into smaller pieces, indicates that they're not really readying it for human consumption. If it's not being ready for, I will say, remember, people would not feed kosher animals to their animals. Doesn't make sense. It's a waste of resources. You have enough animals that are not kosher, or enough shrifas that are batched up, or enough animals that are just shrifas. You're never going to feed your animals something that's fit for human consumption. So the Gemara says, so Rabbi Yossi says, you would literally get malchus for going and eating the vela. Okay. So the Gemara says, masnisa amrakein, evari nevelos, v'chatichos mutaros. So we'll say, the Gemara says, you're right, and this is unfortunate. What did the Mishnah say? If you find whole limbs, then what? We assume that it's an avela. And if you find it cut up in pieces, then what are we saying? Then we consider it kosher. Now look what the Gemara says. Chatichos mutaros, lo mamish. And we'll say, when we say that if you find the animal cut up in pieces, that it's mutaros. What does mutaros mean, we'll say? What does mutaros mean? Mutaros means you take it home, right? Leaving aside Mr. Martyr's issues in terms of, you know, the Elimetzius issues. Leaving those aside for just a little bit. But what it means is that Lemaisa means if I find that steak on the ground, it's the 3-hour rule, right? I find that steak on the ground, right? I take it home. It's a steak, you know what I'm saying? You know, I'm gonna grill it and I can mamish eat it. So I'll say, if mutaros literally means that I can mamish eat it, then dikavasa ivarim nevelos. Lokin alehim mishum nevela. So we'll say again, remember, these two phrases of chatichos, or these two concepts of chatichos and ivarim, have to go hand in hand. And if mutar literally means that I could eat this meat because it's kosher, then when we say that the ivarim are nevelos, what does that have to mean? That has to mean that if I eat it, I what? I get malchus. Why? because I have violated the Avera of eating an Avela. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Krispa, Bishim Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, Im Hayu Marchozos. So we'll say again, so this is just fascinating. See, even though, again, what the Gemara is saying over here is, I might have thought that when it says Nevelos, it means Nevelos of Safek. And therefore, again, maybe I'm not going to get Malchus, I'm not going to get Malchus of Safek. Kamash Mala. No, that Nevelos means Nevelos Mamish, and Mutaros means Mutaros Mamish. And just like you can eat the steak, you can also get Malchus on the Nevela, or on the limb. So you answer the following. So, Im Hayu Marchozos, Mutaros. So we'll say here, Rabbi Krispa, in the name of Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, as another idea, that if the pieces of meat were strung together, machroz also means strung together, then that's also mutaros. So we'll say, apparently, the way people would often go ahead and store kosher meat fit for consumption is they would string it together. A person would not take the time to string together nevela. Nevela, you just leave out. So if you find them strung together, that's also indicative of the fact that they're mutar. Tesha chanuyos mochros basnavei. I will say, now here we get into a fascinating sugya, which really brings up multiple concepts. So tesha chanuyos, you have nine stores, mochros basar nevela. Nine stores that sell non-kosher meat. Va'achas mocheres basar shchuta. And one store sells kosher meat. And what happens, I will say? Now here, it's very important to understand. I went into one of the stores and I bought a piece of meat. And what happens? Nischalfulo. Now what happens? I'm holding the steak. And what happens? I will say, I don't remember which store I went into. So what's the halacha? Choshesh. A person has to be choshesh. Now I will say, what does that mean? Choshesh. If you take a look at the Kavanah Eda, he writes on the right hand side, choshesh. Umisfeka asuros kulan. You can't eat it. So what happens? Aval in lokin alav the kol kavua kemechza mechzadam. I will say again, we don't have time to do this concept justice, but there's a concept of kol kavua kemechza mechzadam, which means that when an item originates from a fixed point of origin, then lemaisa, what that does is it creates a 50-50 possibility. Now, what does that mean? Essentially, we're going to make a distinction is from where I went and took an item from a fixed location versus when I find an item just in the middle of the street. So the way we deal with that is differently. So again, when you take an item from a fixed point of origin, then we assume that the variables are 50-50. So I went into the store, I bought a piece of meat. I don't know what store I bought the meat from. And I will say again, in this case, we don't care about the fact that nine stores are kosher and one store is not kosher. Because I took it from a fixed location, that creates a 50-50 paradigm. And because of that what? Because of that lemaisa, I can't eat the meat. However, the Gemara says, Ula nimtzeis, however, if I find the meat on the ground somewhere, meaning outside of the store, then holchin achar harov. So we'll say again, if I find meat outside of the store, then what? Then we look at statistical probabilities. And since nine stores are not kosher, one store is kosher, then lemaisa can we assume the meat is kosher. On the other hand, Rabbi, what about the flip case? I'm sorry. Teisha chanuyos mochros basar shchuta. Let's say you have nine stores that sell kosher meat. Verse case. Va'achas mocheres basar nevela. And one store sells non-kosher meat. And Rabbi, again, case number one is what? I go into the store. I purchase a piece of meat. I come out. And now what? I don't know where I purchased it from. Nischalful, I don't know where I purchased it from. What's the halacha? Choshesh. Choshesh means Rabbi, again, same concept. Whenever you go ahead and you purchase and you take something from a fixed point of origin, from an established place, then that creates a fit. The reasons for this are, we're not going to get into this now. These are halachic concepts that are backed up by certain realities. We're not getting into the whys now. We're just taking the principles. So now I will say, because I took it from a point of rest with inside a fixed point of origin, then lemaisa, I treat the entire situation as 50-50. Now, what does that do in this situation, Rabbi Osai? What does that do? What does that mean for the meat? Therefore, what? I can't eat it. Because Rabbi Osai, remember again, the fact that nine stores are kosher and one store is not is irrelevant. Because whenever I take something from a fixed point of origin, lemaisa, it makes it 50-50. It's kemechza amechza damya. So therefore, it says no different as if there were five stores kosher, five non-kosher stores, and therefore I can't eat the meat. However, where does the majority help? Well, the nimtzeis holchen achar harov. Where it does help, Rabbi Osai, is again in a situation where lemaisa, I find it in the street. So when I find the piece of meat in the street and there are nine kosher butchers and one non-kosher butcher, then the statistical reality allows me to say that that's from the kosher store.
This was a concept they used in L.A. for the Haney meat.
Oh, really? Interesting. Very interesting. I did not know that. So I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Hanimsa b'yad nachri. Rabbi will say, what about if you find meat in the hand of a non-Jew? Right? Let's say a non-Jew has meat. A non-Jew has meat. Now I will say, again, this is interesting. Basra nimsa, the Karbon Ha'id writes, Basra nimsa b'yad nachri. What about meat that's found in the hand of a non-Jew? So what do we say about that? So Gemara says, so if a non-Jew has meat, that's like finding the meat in Rosh Sarabim, which means what Rabbi will say, everything depends on the number of kosher meat sources. If there's a majority of kosher, then the meat found in the hand of a non-Jew, that's clearly not his. That Rabbi will say, then it's kosher. Otherwise, it's not kosher. So Gemara says, one second, Rabbi Lazer, Bei Rabbi Chagai, Habi Masmich le Rabbi Mana Chama. So I'll say, what happens? Excuse me, le Rabbi Mana. So Rabbi Lazer, the son of Rabbi Chagai, was holding up Rabbi Mana. I mean, Rabbi Mana was leaning on him, literally leaning on him. Chama lechad aramoi, they saw a particular non-Jew, mikatea min susei, cut off a piece of meat from his horse, umapik libra, and he brought it inside. Amar lei, hadehi de Amar Rabbi Yochanan. So is this what Rabbi Yochanan was talking about when he said that meat found in the hand of a non-Jew is like it's found in the public thoroughfare? And I will say, what that means is, what he's questioning is, I don't understand, how could you assume that meat that's found in the hand of a non-Jew is kosher at all? I mean, why would you even have a halamina? That meat is kosher. The non-Jew doesn't have to keep the laws of kashrus. So why would you make, and even if there are 25 kosher butchers and one non-kosher butcher, why would you assume for a moment that the meat in the hand of the non-Jew is kosher? To which the Gemara says, "Amar Lei, Kena Rabbi Yosi Rebbe, Behein Shera Oso Yotze Mimakol and Shal Yisrael." Oh, what's the case of Amar saying? The case of where they discussed about meat in the hand of a non-Jew is where they saw the non-Jew exiting a kosher store. So, if you see the non-Jew exiting a kosher store, what do you assume to be the status of the meat in his hand? And I will say again, this is going to bleed into the next sugya, which is, do you assume that the kosher vendor gave him kosher meat? Do you assume that he gave him non-kosher meat? To which Rabbi Yochanan said, that if you see a non-Jew exiting a kosher store, the meat that's found in his hand is considered to be like what? Like meat found in the Rosh Sarabim. And therefore, if the majority of sources for meat are kosher, then the meat will be kosher. If the majority are not kosher, then the meat will be non-kosher. So we'll stop over here. We'll pick up again six lines up from the bottom tomorrow.
Okay.